Hello all, welcome to Up the podcast made by the fans, for the fans. Grab yourself a drink, put your feet up and listen in. And by the way, there could be some strong language.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a very, very special episode of Up the Poshcast. Harry, Lods, and myself have just sat down with Craig McHale-Smith and recorded a feature-length episode talking through his entire Peterborough United career. For our generation, three 30-something-year-old fans, McHale-Smith is one of the iconic figures of what was the iconic Posh team, really, of my lifetime. It was the best time supporting Posh. The most successful time supporting Posh. And in this episode, we get some insight into Craig's stories over the years, some stories you probably haven't heard before, hopefully. We really hope you enjoy the episode. So sit back, relax, and we've got you covered for the next hour or so. Hi, Craig. How's things? Good evening.
I'm very well, very well. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, good, thank you. So we just wanted to talk basically your entire Peterborough United career, which is three stints, so quite a lot to talk about. The first question we wanted to ask is basically, when you first arrived, it was a relatively big step in your career, wasn't it, from non-league to go to League Two, but also it was quite a big step for Darren Ferguson at the time, because he'd only been in charge for a very short period of time. So I'd love to get your brief thoughts on what was your first impressions of Darren Ferguson and Darren Ferguson football?
So obviously when I first came in, I was signed under Keith Alexander. So I kind of met Keith and he introduced me to all the Peterborough stuff and the training ground and all of that kind of bits and pieces. And then I kind of went away and a little time later, I came back, but Keith had been let go, and then Darren had come in. So I'd met Darren and had a chat with Darren, and obviously he was young. He's kind of literally just out of his own playing career, kind of trying to forge his way. So obviously for the club, it was a very bold step to take a risk on someone who'd just come out of their playing career. But obviously under Fergie, you could see like he liked to play attacking football. It was always very much just get it forward. And try and create with the creative players we had. And obviously me being a centre forward guy who doesn't really defend, that was great to hear.
Yeah, and you hit the ground running, right? It was, what, 8 goals in your first 13 games that half season. Did you surprise yourself with how quickly you adapted to it?
Yeah, I did. I came from Dagenham and I was doing really well at Dagenham. I think I had 14 goals in 28 games. And obviously it was a step up. So it was just kind of, I thought, that kind of part of the season, just to get adjusted to it, like understand what it's like what the differences are. But obviously, yeah, it just flowed. Everything I was hitting at that moment in time was going in. I think I was kind of taking the form I had probably maybe from Dagenham, trying to take it into that. Maybe I had a little bit of naivety at the same time with just kind of just maybe just going at it. And there to finish with that many goals in that space of time, it was amazing, and it kind of gave me a great boost to kind of like, as a centre forward, you want to come in and score as quick as you can. So to have done that and in that amount of games, it kind of gave me real confidence for the next season.
Craig, when you joined, I think that January transfer window, we seem to have signed loads and loads of players. How was it coming into a dressing room where sort of everyone was brand new and like trying to settle together?
It was exciting. Obviously, I'd seen Aaron had signed early on, and then Boyd had signed. And these are the guys that I'd played against in the conference. So I played in England C with them as well. So I knew what these guys were like and how good they were. So it was really exciting coming in and seeing all these young lads, like really talented players, kind of being brought together. And obviously, there were still some experienced heads in the team at that moment in time when I came in. But it was like, say the young manager had come in Fergie, they were bringing young, hungry, exciting players. So it was kind of a real exciting time to be part of the club.
It was basically that season was a bit of a weird one, wasn't it? Because you had sort of the old guard and then the new McAnany signings that we would call them. And then it was the season after where things just took off, basically, and we were unstoppable for 2 years, basically. But that summer, I think we signed Micah Hyde, Chris Westwood, and Dean Keats. Could you tell, you know, when they came in, did the levels like just instantly go up? And were you instantly thinking, well, promotion's on the cards this season? Or did you kind of think, well, I don't know where we're going to end up?
I think we believed we could. Obviously, they were three fantastic signings. We were, again, a young, hungry bunch of players who had relatively, most of us had no experience within the leagues. And then you're bringing the same Micah Hyde, Chris Westwood and Dean Keats have all played at the highest level, won things. So it was great to have experience in the dressing room to bounce off, to kind of get an understanding of what it's going to be like. It was really exciting, as I said, to see us all young lads coming together. But I think having those three kind of spine of the team kind of helped us gel even more and probably give us a bit of a grounding and an understanding of what the division was going to be like, and probably not to get too carried away when it was going well and not too disappointed when it wasn't going right.
At that time, I remember being a young fan myself, there was an emerging rivalry from a fan's perspective with MK Dons. I don't know if you guys feel that at all? Like, they're not a historic rival, obviously, being as young a club as they were, but any extra motivation for those games from your perspective?
I think it just became a rival, didn't it? Like, I think that during that season, there were good games. We were obviously both kind of, I think they had a fairly young squad as well. They were pushing to get out of the division. Obviously, it's local-ish, if you can say that. And I say we both got promoted that season. So, and then obviously we took that rivalry into the following season as well. So I think you looked at it as a rivalry because Cambridge wasn't around to have those games. Northampton wasn't around to have those games. So we created that rivalry because we needed one.
I remember hating them for when they came in. Di Matteo was in charge at the time, weren't he? And I think he came in with the most defensive football ever. I remember being absolutely fuming. We were all like, Harry Lodds and I were all like 16 at the time. So those results really affected us back then. I wanted to ask about Hereford as well, because that's where the season obviously culminated. What do you remember about that game? I don't remember it being a classic, to be honest. I remember running on the pitch at the end, but it wasn't the best game, if I remember rightly. And then what was the night out after it? Are there any stories you can tell us, what, 15 years on, disclose?
So the game itself, it wasn't a great game. You said it was cold, it was wet. I think there was excitement within our dressing room knowing what we could achieve within the game. So there was... maybe a little bit of pressure, but a lot of excitement. Say we've spent a whole season, kind of young, hungry lads, on the kind of the verge of completing something that everyone expected of us. So I think Keatsy scored a diving header, which is very rare. I think from a Chris Welkdale cross. So it was just kind of apt that he scored a winner, because he was a fantastic player for us, and led us through that season. And it was just an amazing experience to kind of say, not take your chance. Well, take your chance. We took our chance as a team. We built ourselves as a team, and all that hard work that we put in, and probably say pressure from outside saying that we should win the league or we should get promoted because of the team we had. It was nice to kind of finish that game and that moment being promoted. Stories, honestly, I can't remember that far back. Like, I know we'd go out, and I think there used to be Toho's and Edwards and places like that. We'd spend our time, and like, I'm not a big drinker, but on the bus back, all the boys were having a beer. I know I've got some photos upstairs, like old school, taking it on the clicky camera and stuff like that. So no, it was amazing to say, like, to all come together and have that little bit of pressure and expectation to deliver. I think was amazing that season.
Going into the following season, the 2008-2009 season, what were the expectations on you guys going into it? Because obviously there were some real big teams in there, like Leeds and Leicester. Was there any expectation at all that we were going to be fighting for promotion or finishing the top two, which obviously we ended up doing?
Yeah, I think that there was massive belief. Like, I think we realised, like, we were still very young. Like to do that, I came in, I was 23 at the end of the season. I was 24. I think Aaron was 24. Boydie was 22. You had like Charlie Lee. You had like real. We still was a really young squad. So we really firmly believed that we could get back-to-back promotions, that we want to take the league by storm and kind of utilise what we're good at. And it didn't really kind of, the first game anyway, it didn't go quite to plan. We lost to Southend in the first game of the season. And then I think we were all looking at each other going, might be a little bit harder than we thought. But I think once we got into the swing of things and I think we might have played Leighton Orient at home and we beat them and then we beat someone else and we started to get on a real good run. I think there was them real belief. And then obviously you go and to play, I think you say it's probably like Leicester, I think was in the division at that time. I think Leeds were in there and we got some really massive results against these teams. And you start to kind of look at it and go like, we're good enough. Like we believe we can do this. And obviously you just keep picking up momentum. And I think that the kind of the belief in the dressing room was so high. It was like every game we went into, we didn't think we were going to lose. And as you see, like some of the games we could be 3-0 down at half time and come out and win 5-3. There was just a drive that like that no one could beat us. And I think that kind of pushed us all the way to achieve that back-to-back promotion.
You mentioned 5-3 as a scoreline there, Craig. I remember a 5-4 against Bristol Rovers where I still think back and I still think that's one of the greatest Peterborough performances I've seen was your strike display that day. Do you class that game as like your best performance in a Peterborough shirt, or is there another one that you would have ahead of that?
Oh, that's a really good... I think it's definitely up there. Wow. I think I put a few good ones in in the second time we were in League One. I think I scored like 35 goals that season. I think probably stepping into League One and scoring a hat-trick in League One, and obviously it was on TV at the same time. So there was a lot of kind of things that came from it. Obviously Aaron went off injured as well during that game. I think I really did enjoy it. And I think I'd say from Fergie's, the way Fergie used to love to set up, we were an attacking team. We were always going to score goals, but we were always going to concede them. And we knew that it was always just a case of, can we outscore them? And I think lots of that, especially that season going up back to back, that we played a lot of games where we had that belief and that kind of grind to make sure we'd win the games.
But you personally, because you went in that season to, I think it was 23 goals that 08-09 season. I think it was doubling or nearly doubling from the League Two season before your tally. Just, were you actively thinking about changing your game, improving your game in like, were you knowing what to build on, what to let go of in terms of what you were doing? Was there a specific method that you went through to increase your goal tally for that? Or did it just naturally fall into place?
I'm always a person like the 1%. So I'd always work on and look at what I need to do and how I need to get better and work on that. So obviously I think I had a few injuries at the beginning season of League Two. As you said, I think I finished the whole season, including Cup. I think I got 19, which was like okay, considering as I missed an early part. And then the second season, obviously, going to League One, is you're kind of looking at it to see what the defenders are like, how much different it is, kind of what obviously the expectations everyone's putting on you. And I say the first game we played Southend, I didn't score, and it was quite a tough game, really. And then I think after that, I scored against Leighton Orient and I scored in a couple other games. Then there was that real belief that I could score at this level. And I think that drove me forward. And as I said, I always practiced that. I know I was a big one that missed loads of one-on-ones because of my pace. I got in so many times and I could probably have had 100 more goals if I could actually finish at that moment, that point. But I went away and I worked on it and I worked on my pace. I worked on my strength. I worked on how I thought about the game. Because obviously, as you go up the levels, you have to increase that. And my aim was kind of ultimately was to try and get to the Premier League. So I had to keep improving that every season to give myself that possibility.
Did you actually notice much of a difference in quality when you went up? Because like Harry said, I think you nearly doubled the amount of goals that you got. So were the defenders better? Did you notice any difference, or did it just feel like playing League Two again?
They were a bit smarter, they were a bit stronger, a bit quicker. You played against a lot more experienced players at that level. But I think for me, it was like I was starting to grow into myself. Like at Dagenham, that's where I kind of first started doing like my strength conditioning and a bit more focusing on my game. And then as it kind of went into Peterborough for the first season, I was like a little bit injured, still doing the bits and pieces I need to work on. And I think as I was getting older, I was getting stronger and I was getting quicker and I was kind of fine-tuning what I actually needed to do for me, like what worked for me. So it's kind of like I was always investigating what I could do better. So then I think when I got into League One, I just think that it was all kind of a culmination of it coming together. It started to kind of, I could feel it like building. My finishing was better, my hold-up play was better. Again, playing against better players, but I think that made me a better version of me.
I want to talk about your relationship with Aaron McLean, because I don't think we've seen a better strike partnership at Peterborough since you two, or probably even before you two, to be honest. What was it that was so good about your relationship that meant you scored so many goals between you?
I think we wanted the best for each other. I think like it was a case of, well, there's two things actually. We wanted the best for each other. So like if he was in a position to score and it was easy for him to tap in, I would have played it to him and vice versa. It wasn't about him having a competition, maybe a bit of a jokey competition to see who scores more, but it was about each other. It's about helping each other become the best we could possibly be, score as many goals as we both could and help the team progress. So I think that was one massive part of it. And the second, obviously, Darren came in and said that we couldn't play together. So we believed we could. Obviously, we're pretty similar in stature. He was more of a stocky, like hold-up player. I was more off the shoulder. So we believed we had the ability to kind of mesh our abilities together and create something special. And as I said, I think kind of loving being around each other on and off the pitch, I think drove us on the pitch and allowed us to score more goals.
Do you think Fergie genuinely believed you couldn't play together? Or do you think he was doing that as like a motivational tactic to make you, you know, reverse psychology?
I don't know. Maybe he was. I like, that would be a really good question to ask him. Like, again, I think it was just it fueled us. It was like we, because if he'd have come in and brought another striker in, it might have been him, Aaron, playing or me playing. So it was like we had such a kind of great friendship that we built straight away. There was like, we don't want anyone else to come in and play. Like, we want to play together and we want to help each other and we want to take this club forward and we both want to take our careers forward. So, yeah, I'd say you'd have to ask Fergie whether he was reverse psychology in both of us.
You know, as we kind of wrap up on the 08-09 season, just any particular games that stood out for you, or and also actually specifically on, I suppose, Leicester and Leeds, because they were a little bit of an, I think in themselves, an example of what it was going to be like in the Championship. Obviously, Leicester went up with us and we beat them 2-0 at London Road. So I'm guessing you had some confidence, but what was it like playing them? Were you already thinking about what it would be like in that following 09-10 year playing teams like that?
Not really. I think obviously we kind of tried to take everything as it came. And obviously Leeds, everyone knows the history of Leeds and Leicester's and these massive, there was obviously huge clubs within that division at that time. So when we played them, there was always a lot of respect, but also that a real desire and belief that like, just it doesn't matter who they were, they could be, they say, the Leeds or Leicester, we'd still go and give them a good game. It wouldn't be kind of too much respect. So, and I think that showed. We beat Leeds at home, we beat Leicester at home, and obviously we got promoted alongside Leicester. So I don't think we showed them any respect that season. And obviously we knew going into the following season, Leicester would be stronger because they would obviously bring in big players. And obviously then going into that division, you always knew it was going to be tough because the majority of them players have played like at the highest level. So it was always going to be another step to try and take.
You say there that you knew it was going to be tough, but I remember at the time we were being tipped to like reach the playoffs in the Championship. I still remember 4-4-2's predictions and everything coming out. And I remember thinking, like, I think I was at school at the time and I remember telling everyone, oh, we're going to be Premier League next season. And it felt like we had so much momentum. Yeah. And then it all just went horribly wrong, really, that for that year. But what was the belief like in the squad going into that season? Did you, like, I have no idea where you guys thought you'd end up. Did you think it was, because you'd only really known success at Posh. So were you like, top six is on here, or was it, we just need to stabilise?
I think it was, take it as it comes. I think, like, we done fantastic to go from League Two into League One. And I think you realise the jump between League One and the champion into the Championship is massive. And the size of the clubs there, a lot of them have been in the Premier League. As I said, a lot of the players have played Premier League football, international football. So we kind of knew it was going to be a bit more of a test than the last two seasons. But we still had belief that we could go places. And we were just very unfortunate. I think during that first kind of early part of the season, we scored a goal against QPR, which got chalked off, which would have won us the game. I think we scored a couple of goals against West Brom that got chalked off, which would have won us the game. So there's momentum shifters there, because you win those games, that gives you more confidence and you start kind of pushing forward. And for us, unfortunately, it's like it kind of slightly killed the momentum. And again, it's, when you get to the Championship, the games are grueling. Like I'm not kind of saying League One's not tough, but you get to that level and you have to be on it, and not for 90 minutes. You're playing against better players. You've got to be sharper. You get less chances. So there was a lot that we learned in that early part of the season, but unfortunately, we just didn't have enough throughout that season.
How did the dressing room change, like, at the beginning of that season, like as soon as you started getting the bad results? Because obviously as a group, you've only really enjoyed success together. You've never really gone for a period of bad results in such a way. And I remember the sort of leaders in the dressing room, I think Michael Hyde left the previous season, Dean Keats had left a few months into that season. How did the dressing room sort of cope, and what was, like, Fergie's impact on the negative results? How was his behaviour sort of changing?
I still think we were positive, because I said, like, I don't think there was a time when we got outplayed or we got battered. And say there's certain results that are, like, on another day, they go the other way, and you're looking at a different position in the division. So I still feel like we believed we could compete at that level. I think it's just sometimes the results culminate, and sometimes you start looking for results, and that's what kind of what we were doing. We were probably not going into games with that confidence. It was more kind of like, all, like, this is a bit more tougher. Like, we're not getting the chances we were getting. It's not as easy. And say, I think the results kind of started to show that. And Fergie was good, and he tried to keep us kind of pushing forward. I don't think we had as much experience in that dressing room at that time. I think maybe we could have done with maybe some more Champions experience in that dressing room, because we were all still relatively young. As I say, we're only like 2 years in. So I think, again, I was 25, 26. We were still a very young team, and we had experience in League Two and League One. But again, it's the Championship is a different beast, and you're going to need sometimes two or three older heads to just guide you when the going gets tougher at that level. So maybe that was something we could have done better with. But yeah, it wasn't like a dressing room. It was like having a go at each other. We still all wanted the best for each other. We were still trying our best. It's just that we couldn't seem to get the results at the time.
I guess I'll ask about that period where we had Aaron McLean basically saying that he wanted to go. Fergie goes. Mark Cooper comes in. You know, general thoughts about that period. I mean, did you sense that Fergie was going to go? And what was it like at that time, having a new manager come in for the... I know that you were signed by Keith Alexander, but for the first time in your Peterborough United career, having someone new in the door?
Yeah, it was difficult. It was obviously with Aaron going, like, don't ever want to stop in a player's way. Like, he had a great opportunity to go to a bigger club. Obviously for us, we would love him to stay, because he's a goal scorer and someone who we felt obviously would help us. But again, like, he'd done brilliantly the previous two seasons, and his opportunity came. Darren leaving, never really saw it coming. Like, we all had the confidence in him, we all believed in him. Again, he was the guy that had brought us all in, and like, we all trusted his judgment and his tactics and everything like that. I think obviously it's just part and parcel of the football. Like if your results aren't going well, something has to give, and more often than not, it's not the players, it's the manager. So unfortunately, he went, and we were all kind of gutted really, because we all still felt there was a way out. We all still felt we could still perform and find the performances that we needed to do to keep pushing us out and kind of get us where we wanted to be. So yeah, as you said, that next period was really chaotic. You had, I think, was it Mark Cooper who came in next? And obviously he came from like lower leagues, and it was, I think there was a big step for him to take. And obviously the players that we maybe invested in at that time were probably not the players that we needed to invest in. So there was a lot of kind of ins and outs, and it just became kind of very confusing. Did like new style, new players. And I think that kind of showed a little bit on the pitch.
Just wrapping back around to when Fergie went quickly. Did you got, because I think it was quite abrupt. I think we all know the story now that basically him and Darren just had a fallout after Newcastle away. Did he ever get back in contact with you, or did he get a chance to say bye before he went, basically, or was it just gone?
No, he was gone. That was it. And obviously, we didn't, I don't think we found out until it was mentioned on Sky. So we didn't know. And then he'd gone. And then we were obviously waiting to hear what was going on. And then obviously Mark Cooper came in. So say we didn't really see that happening. It was kind of like it took us by surprise, and because we said we believed we were going to get out of that. But I guess, as I said, football and results are a part of the business, and if you're not doing it, these things are going to happen. So yeah, it was disappointing, but I say we had to move on fast.
Yeah, I'm sure. What happened though when it popped up on Sky and like you saw Fergie go? Was it just, were you all texting each other, or
we just couldn't believe it. Like, just like, obviously I think we had the Newcastle game, and then it was just kind of a bit of a shock really. And then it's kind of like, as soon as that happens, it's like who's coming in then? Who's the next manager? Like, that's kind of the ultimate thing, is like what you're focusing on is who's coming in, how, like what they're going to play. Obviously, the players at that moment in time hadn't performed to how they should have done, so new players are going to come in. Like, is your position safe? So there's a lot that kind of goes through your mind as soon as the manager kind of leaves. So there was a lot of waiting and seeing what happens next.
One of the most iconic things from Mark Cooper's time at Posh, apart from obviously him signing Exodus Jehagan, was the 4-4 draw against Cardiff, the famous 4-0 comeback to 4-4 in the last minute. What was that like to be a part of? Because there's a lot of Posh fans that still talk about that as one of the craziest matches they've seen.
The thing is, it's like it was just typical Posh. Like, we knew we always had that in our locker. Somehow we didn't know, like I say, being 4-0 down at half, like I think 4-0 down at half time was it, we were wearing a white kit that day as well. So it was just like, it was just really, yeah, you think flipping out, like what a day. And then you go in the dressing room and you get around each other and you kind of say like, because we used to love shooting towards London Road, and we just knew if we got one goal, the fans would just suck the ball into the net. So it was like we were kind of going around each other, just like saying like just keep going. Like, once if we get one, like we'll get that momentum and we'll get the second one. And like we got the first, and then you can just feel it. Once we get the first, like it just builds, and then you get the second, and then you can just feel the energy, and then it just kept going. And obviously we were banging on the door right towards the end. And then I think Josh Simpson scored right at the end. And it was never like, you know, you're never surprised. You're excited that you've drawn, but we were never surprised because that we knew that was the capability of what we had in the team.
Yeah. And that was one of the highlights. I think we beat Watford at home as well. But beyond that, it wasn't long until Mark Cooper was gone as well. Under Jim Gannon, I mean, he got a few results when he came in, but clearly didn't actually want to be here for geographic reasons, basically. And first time in your Posh career, we had a manager who didn't see you as first choice. What was that like for you?
Yeah, it was really difficult. I didn't see eye to eye with Jim at all. So it was just, I found it really, really frustrating. As you said, the two seasons and maybe the first half of the championship season, I was playing. So I was kind of used to that. And then obviously he came in and he completely changed it. He brought Liam Dickinson in. He went a completely different way of playing football. So we clashed a lot on the training pitch, and it's not really like me, but we just didn't see eye to eye at all. And I was kind of getting frustrated with not playing. I think there was a point when I was going on loan to Reading, and then the chairman stopped it. I went in to see Jim Gannon, and he was like, "Yeah, you're not in my plans." So he said, "You can go out on loan." And Dara kind of got hold of Reading, and Reading were going to take me on loan. And then Dara stopped it just as I was literally walking out the door to drive down to Reading. He pulled it. So, and then I came back in and I played a couple of games. But as you said, like, Jim got a few good results, and then obviously he didn't fancy it. So that was a really tough time. That's probably the toughest time I've had in my Peterborough career.
Yeah, what sort? Why was he indicating that he didn't want to play you? Like, it seems absolutely mental given what happened the season after, which we'll get onto. But what was his reasoning when you went and knocked on his door?
I think just maybe, and I can take this on the chin. I probably wasn't scoring enough. Maybe whether I wasn't contributing enough. When obviously as a striker, you need to be scoring goals, and I think I only finished up with, I think it was 10 or 11 goals that season. So I get it to an extent. I just think it's just the way he came and did it. There wasn't much talk about why or what was going on. And so that's probably more what left a sour taste in my mouth. But I also understand, as I said, being a centre forward, you're judged on goals. And at that time, I probably wasn't performing to stay in the team. So he's going to bring someone else in to try and steady the ship, and he brought Liam Dickinson again, completely different striker to me, big, tall, but quite powerful. So that's kind of the way he was looking to play.
You mentioned Darren McAntony there. How involved was he with the players in the dressing room? Did you see much of him sort of on your day-to-day basis, or was it very much he was in the background and only sort of got involved when needed?
Yeah, not at all, really. He's like, he doesn't coming into the dressing room. He doesn't kind of, yeah, like you pass him by chats and stuff like that, but he's never really involved. He does stay away and give the manager and the player the space that they need to get on with what they're doing. Ultimately, he's brought the manager in. He's allowed the manager to bring the players in. So he allows them to get on with what they need to do. So I know he's a very enthusiastic man, and I know how much he loves the club and how it's very difficult for him to not get involved, but he does stay away to and give the guys what they need.
And then Jim Gannon was done. We're on to our fourth manager of the season. It was Gary Johnson coming in next. And it kind of leads into the beginning of the next season, but how did you feel at that stage? Was there any thought from you as to whether your time at Posh was done? Did Gary Johnson have to do any convincing for you to keep you to stay at that stage?
No, like obviously he came in towards the end. I kind of got back into the team. I think I scored a couple of goals at Plymouth. I got a few towards the end of the season. And obviously he wanted me to kind of stay for the next season. I can't remember off the top of my head if there was much interest in that summer. But obviously, like, even if there was and it didn't come to anything, it wasn't a case of like, I was going to get on with my job with Peterborough, and I wanted to put them back in that division. And I obviously wanted to do myself more justice in the championship, because I don't think I did that season. So obviously he came in and he kind of got some good results towards the end of the season. Obviously, unfortunately, we were relegated, and then we started the next season and he brought a few other strikers in. I think Dave Hibbert came in and a couple of others. So again, it like had to make sure that it was going to be like, oh yeah, Craig McCaskill is starting, because I don't feel my season previous was, I know I'd done League One the season before that and done well, but you kind of get judged off of what you've done previous. So my season wasn't that great. So obviously bringing other people in, give me a good kick up the arse to really knuckle down again and focus on stuff that I needed to focus on. Because it was a difficult season to have four managers, to have lots of kind of ups and downs. It was kind of a really tough, I think, season for all of us in the Championship. And we didn't really, I don't think any of us, maybe Boydie to an extent, actually showed what we were really capable of.
Of the three that you worked with, the three other managers, but Fergie, I know you weren't with him that long, but who did you get on best, and who did you feel was the best manager of those three?
Probably Gary Johnson. I think Mark was very young into his career. I think it was a lot for him to come in to try and kind of steady the ship. And again, I don't think the players that are brought in, not kind of disrespect to them, but I don't think they were at the level that we needed to help us within that situation. So I didn't really get on with Jim Gannon. So I can pick really is Gary Johnson, and obviously he kind of gave me that confidence towards the end of the season in the Championship, and then kind of give me confidence leading into the next season. And I had a really good chat with him when we were in League One, and I'll jump a little bit here, but League One the next season, we had a little chat. He kind of had a go at me in the game at half time, and I think I was sitting on about 14 goals before like Christmas. So I pulled him after the game, I think it was, and I said to him, like, I've been scoring loads of goals, like, and you're on my case, like, what's going on? And he kind of just said to me, look, you're not doing enough for the team, and I need you to hold the ball up more, I need you to bring more people into play, I need you to do more of that. So that was really good from him. That was a massive kind of learning curve in my career, which actually really helped me moving forward.
The 2010-11 season obviously ended in such a great way, and we all sort of remember the celebrations, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a minute. But the beginning of the season, I remember us getting absolutely smashed away at Bournemouth, smashed away at Southampton. What exactly like changed? Obviously, the manager changed, but what sort of went wrong like for Gary Johnson, and what like immediate impact did Darren Ferguson sort of put?
This is also a team that has Grant McCann and Lee Tomlin in it now as well.
Yeah. And I don't know, sometimes you kind of have that hangover of getting relegated. Sometimes it's kind of that confidence again of of trying to find that little bit of form, because obviously, like, again, quite a lot of us didn't perform to how we wanted to. So it was kind of like finding that belief in yourself again, finding that confidence. You say, but you had two really good teams there, Southampton, who aren't really a small team, we're looking to kind of get back up. Bournemouth were strong. I think we take the lead against Bournemouth, and then I think we lost, was it 5-1 or something? And then I know we got beaten by Southampton. I think we got beaten by Brighton at home as well. And I think there was another one in there. So I don't think it just quite clicked that season, especially at the beginning. I think we were just, say more, maybe it was a hangover from coming down from the Championship, and maybe you kind of go into it thinking, oh yeah, we were a Championship club and it'll be easy where we left off, and it wasn't, and that kind of showed in the results that we got early on.
Even when things started to get better in that year, the defence was still shipping goals left, right and centre. I think we had as many goals conceded as one of the teams that got relegated. Was that at all frustrating for you as a striker? Actually, as I'm asking the question, I'm kind of thinking it also means you've always got to be on the front foot attacking, I guess.
Yeah. It never bothered me. Like, it was always a thing. We knew we were going to concede. But I think because of the way we played and stuff like that, like, we just always seemed to concede. So as a centre forward, it was always like, okay, can we outscore? No, not can we. We're going to have to outscore these teams. So it kind of made it a challenge to make sure, even when we were 3 or 4 nil up, it was like, flipping out, we need to keep getting goals here just in case we can let goals in. But yeah, it was never a worry. We always knew that with the way we played, with the players we had in our team, because I think Mark Little might have been playing right wing back, and maybe Tommy Rowe, and I know Charlie Lee came in left wing back. So we were very attacking. Like, they're not two players that are like going to sit in and keep a 4-4-2. They're two players that are going to just keep bombing on and hoping that, I think it was Benno and Gabby Zak at the back. So hoping those two could just, well, Gabby Zak's like four players in one anyway, but he was just hoping that those two could just defend while the other two wing backs went flying up. So no, there was never a worry. It was just a kind of a challenge.
One of the challenges you had personally was adapting from playing with Aaron McLean to playing essentially up front by yourself with Lee Tomlin behind you. What was it like, firstly, adapting to that and playing with Lee Tomlin, who is such a creative maverick? I'm sure it must have been sort of quite hard to get used to that, but obviously it paid off in the end.
Yeah, obviously with Aaron, like I'd say we kind of shared the work. I still did all his work anyway, but me and Aaron, we both do running. Like obviously there was always someone up there with you, so you kind of, you worked in tandem. Obviously Tomo used to sit in the pocket in the 10 more often than not, wouldn't really run past you, but Tomo was I love playing with Tomo. Now, to be fair, I as much as I did love playing with Aaron, but when he kind of went, it just allowed me to loads more space to go wherever I wanted to. With Tomo sitting in the 10 as well, if he got the ball in there, it always used to draw centre halves out because they were so worried about what he was going to do with the ball. So it always left me little holes and little pockets to kind of get into. And then obviously when he gets on the ball, like I didn't even have to look at him. I knew if I made a run, he would put it where I wanted it. So they were both two different players, and I love playing with both like equally. And obviously Tomo's went on and had a great career, and I've seen him recently, and he's still one of the best ball playing footballers I've played with.
Before we get on sort of the culmination of that season, there's one game that really stood out for me. Not long, I think, after Fergie had come back, which was the 4-4 against Southampton, where we went 2-0 down and 4-2 down. And one of the goals in that game was completely down to your trademark charging down, whether it was the defender or the goalkeeper. It ended up resulting in one of the goals. I just wanted to ask really about whether that was coached into you. Were there any coaches, or did Fergie ever discourage it? Or, you know, it was such an integral part of that season, was the off the ball charging down. You know, where did it come from as well? Like, you've always just felt you wanted to do it.
It's always been in me. For some reason, I just love chasing the football. Like, so I don't know what it is. It's just literally like, I was given a great ability where I could sprint and I could repeat that over and over and over again for 90 minutes. Like, I never really got tired. Like, I could almost replicate the same speed over and over again. So it was a case of like, and my aim was always to do was just knacker the centre halves out, tire the defenders out as much as I could, chasing them down, because I know that eventually, once I do get tired, they're going to be more tired than I am. And I think a lot of my goals came in like the 70th minute plus, because I'd wear teams down and players down so much that eventually I'd get in. And it was just a love for the game. Like I was never the like gifted, like unbelievable footballing ability like Tomo or a Boydie, but I was given the unbelievable work ethic. I could work harder than anyone else on that football pitch. As I said, I could sprint for constantly. So it was like every game I went into, it was like I wanted to leave everything I possibly had. I think because of coming from non-league, I think because of like I was worked at home base and I was going to college and playing football all at the same time, I understood that like one day it will go. So it was always like, I want to leave everything on that football pitch in this one game. And then if I get the next game, then great. I'll do exactly the same. And I'll keep replicating that until my time with football is finished. So that was always the way that I wanted to play.
You mentioned in that answer two unbelievable talents, which were Boyd and Tomlin. I'm going to give you probably the hardest question that you could ask.
I know.
Only pick one and you got a bench one. Which way are you going?
That's a horrible question to ask.
I am sorry, but gotta get your.
Well, I'd say Boydie, I'd start, and Tomo, I'd bench. Like
a man of my own heart.
Impact sub Lee Tomlin.
Yeah, it's impossible because they're both like there's obviously both slightly different in who they are and what they offer, and they were just both fantastic. I was lucky I had both of them playing on the pitch at the same time, so it's like they are amazing talents. I just think for me, I think obviously Boydie went to the top and stayed there for a bit, and I think I'd say Boydie.
Yeah. I'm, like I said, a man after my own heart. Anyone that's listened to this pod for a while, I've got a dog and he's called Boydie. So that is my love for the man. just an unbelievable player. I wanted to talk about the end of the season. We can't do 2010-11 without the playoffs because, I mean, the picture there, that is MK Dons at home. Still my favourite posh game at London Road. Is it your favourite as well, or is there any other games you can think of that were better than it?
No, I think for what the importance of it and how it went, I think it's like that's probably my favourite game. I think just like the atmosphere is probably one of the best I've ever felt at London Road. I think obviously playing the first game, losing the first game, kind of getting a dodgy penalty towards the end, and which gave us a bit of a lifeline. I think we knew bringing them back here that one goal wasn't enough for them. Like we knew that once we got on a roll, once the crowd got going, like they weren't going to stop us. And obviously Grant swung in his free kick early on, and then that was it. From then it was just a case of like it's coming. It's just when is it going to come? And for me to get it was just like the most amazing feeling. And obviously the scenes afterwards, everyone running on the pitch and. Yeah, I loved that night. It's like I say, it's probably the favourite memory I have there.
What was the impact of Grant McCann's experience sort of during that playoff? Because I think, had he won like three promotions before then, was he sort of instrumental in that playoff campaign?
Yeah, I think it shows how important experience is. As I said, when we went to the Championship, we didn't really have experience. And that's what we desperately needed, which I think, like I say, hindsight's a wonderful thing, but it might have given us the opportunity to stay up because players would have an understanding of the league and what it takes to stay within that division. Obviously, having Grant in that team, he had such an immense wealth of experience. He knew what the playoffs and stuff were like. So he was just someone that everyone kind of looked up to, and he guided us really. Like obviously, he scored the penalty. At MK, he scored the free kick in the home leg as well, and then ultimately he scored in the final. So he was someone that definitely had a huge impact on the team.
And you know, you completely earned your move away. You went, I guess, you knew going into that playoff game that your time at Posh was, at the time, you'd have thought it was over, right? Had you already landed on a club on Brighton before the game, before the playoff final?
No, it was just I knew that would be my last game. So, and I just wanted to do what I set out to do, which was leave Peterborough in the Championship. Again, in that season, I was signing for Norwich in the January. All my representatives had gone to Norwich. They'd spoke to him and everything was sorted. And then the deal was kind of was pulled. And from there, it was like, okay, that's football. That's just the way it goes. So I'm making sure that when I do leave in the summer, that Posh are out of this division. And that was my sole aim. And I think that's what drove me to score so many goals that season, is because I wanted to make sure, especially at the end, that the club that I loved being at and loved spending my time at, got what it deserved. And obviously to score in the final, I probably should have had a hat trick really, and it kind of left the door open being on 99 goals, but it was just a typical performance by Peterborough to be 0-0. Probably should have been a couple of goals up, and then to score three goals in the space of 7 minutes, it was just typified what the team had been like over the kind of the three decent seasons. I kind of exclude this Championship season, but the three decent seasons the team was like.
Yeah, and you were, I think it was 27 league goals, right? 35 all competitions at the end of that. I mean, still, you got a goal in the final. It was enough to kill their spirit. It was the second goal, wasn't it? I think Tommy Rowe headed in just before. any other reflections seconds. on that final? I mean, you say you got a hat trick. It was a tough chance you had in the first half. Like, you were getting charged down. I can't remember which defender it was, but it was a good. I think it was a little deflection of your goal. But yeah, any other thoughts? Yeah. What was it like afterwards as well? Like, it must have. It's a bit of an easy question, but I'm guessing it was just unreal, the atmosphere.
It was amazing. Like, I think, as you said, like, with the goals, it was just like, I think because I was in such a great vein of form, it was just a case of like, I expected to score. Like, I'd gone through almost 1-1. I know he came out of nowhere really, but it's like that I could have probably hit it slightly quicker. But again, it's hindsight's a wonderful thing. But yeah, the goal I scored was just happened in slow motion. Obviously, we literally just scored. Boyd had got it. He was in a bit of trouble. So I kind of got closer to the near post just in case, because he couldn't really cross it from there. And then as I've turned, I've just tried to bend it in the far corner, and obviously, like, it's taken a massive deflection. And then as it's taken a deflection, I've just watched it, and I can see it go out, and the keeper hasn't moved, and I can see it go in before it's actually gone in. So I'm already off before the ball's even hit the back of the net. And then just the noise and like the exhilaration and the emotion that, like, because obviously, you say we've scored 60 seconds earlier, and then we've just scored, and it's the 73rd minute, 75th minute. So it's like, realistically, there's no way back for Huddersfield. So it was just like, it was overwhelming. And I think there was excitement. There was kind of like trying to stay calm because there was still time left, and they had very good players. I think Jordan Rhodes was there, Daddy Kadamatri, I think Danny Ward. I think they had a real, real strong team. So it was kind of like trying to really keep your emotions in check to try and get through to the full-time whistle. And then afterwards, it was bittersweet, really, because obviously to win, to get promoted with the club, it was an amazing kind of accomplishment. But then obviously it culminated in the end of a journey. So it was kind of like I was leaving at that, like, as soon as that whistle gone, that was my last kind of moments for Peterborough. So it was like, I had an amazing, amazing joy, but I also had like sadness in the sense that it's come to an end and I'm moving on.
We're not going to spend too long on your time at Brighton, because obviously we're up the posh cast. but I was doing some research for this, and the players you went into the squad there with were some good players. I mean, you had England internationals in there and Spanish internationals, I think. Could you tell the standard jump, like, immediately? And who was the best player in that squad, did you think, over your time there?
You could tell, yeah, the standards, like, kind of went up. Obviously, when I joined Brighton, the ground, they just built the Amex. You kind of see, like, the chairman had a vision, and like I had a real faith that he could achieve that. So, and that's what kind of drew me towards to the club. He'd put a lot of money in to build a stadium. He was looking to build a training ground, which he did on my last season there, which was like £30 million. The squad obviously was strong. They just won the league, and they were adding. So it was like a real amazing kind of journey to begin with that club. And obviously, there was a kind of step up in expectation, in standard. Obviously, you had Gus as a manager who had played at the highest level. So it was a little bit difficult in my first time there, because when I kind of started, because he went from trying to play the way I wanted to play, which was get the ball forward early, get me in behind, use my pace and my harassment. And then he kind of realised that couldn't quite do that. So the whole way the team played completely changed. So I had to kind of learn a new way of playing. So that was really difficult, my time there. But ultimately, the best player I played with there was a guy called Vicente, who was kind of Valencia, and then Real Madrid, I think, tried to buy him. The only thing, obviously, he struggled with was injuries. And I think even when he was at Brighton, he probably was only 75% fit, and he was just ridiculous. Like, he could drift past players. He was very similar to Boydie, but just had a lot more pace. He could go either foot, so he could go on his right and his left. Boydie had, he could use his right, but his left was ridiculous. But he was just phenomenal, and how the Spanish, he was kind of like just before, I think, the Xavis and Iniestas and all of that, or they were just coming in at that point in time. he was around, he was like them. And that was, it was amazing to be kind of on the training pitch of him and just watch him. And then when he got to play, he was just kind of like, trying to take pointers really of like what he was doing. But yeah, I love my time at Brighton, even though it didn't go to how I wanted to do. Obviously, I've got a major injury. I missed 13 months there. But football's football. These things happen. And I was blessed to have the opportunity to do it. And yeah, I'll always be grateful for that.
And left with a couple of unbelievable overhead kick highlights as well, right? I don't know if you did any of those at Posh, but I remember seeing a couple of them pop up. So unlucky with the injuries, because it was what, Achilles, and did you do your knee as well?
So I did my Achilles was when I was there, so I kind of it was really tough because I did my Achilles in the March. We missed out on automatic promotion to the Premier League by 3 points, and then I missed the playoffs against Palace that season, and we lost to Palace in the playoffs. So it was a real difficult kind of period, but it taught me a lot. I think looking back now, it's given me a lot of insight into the kind of the stuff I do now and like the mental side of it and the physical side. So I look at it as a blessing in a way that it's allowed me to now help other people with kind of those issues.
Yeah, totally. And, we do definitely want to ask you at the end of this pod about what you're up to now with your own pod. But I'm glossing essentially over 3 years. We're now 2014. Talk to us about what was that first contact like from Posh? What, you know, the idea of coming back, and was it a hard decision?
No, it wasn't a hard decision. It was obviously that period of time was I was coming off the back of the Achilles injury. I wasn't really getting much time playing. So obviously the first team I'm going to call is Peterborough and to get minutes and play. And obviously I came down, but it was a very short stint because I think I was only there for like 3 games, because I think the Brighton manager, Sammy Hippier, got sacked. And I think this was Christmas as well. So I think I came in and played Leighton Orient. I think I played, I think Bristol City was one. And I think there was another game that I played. It was frustrating because I wanted to be there and play minutes, but then also exciting kind of going back to Brighton to play. But it was just very, very whirlwind. As I said, I didn't kind of get into my stride because, as I say, I was coming off of the Achilles injuries. I was probably a lot heavier than I wanted to be. I was probably 6 or 7 kilos heavier than I should have been. But I enjoyed it for those 3 games, and then I was off again.
I was going to say, did you notice, because obviously that team, it wasn't great, if I'm honest, that sort of era of Posh, we'd gone from being that just unstoppable force to being sort of like mid-table. Could you tell a difference in the squad? What was the atmosphere like when you got back? Did it seem all different, or was it actually relatively similar?
It was a little bit different. I think obviously when I was there the first time, it's like we grew up together. Like we lived around the corners from each other. We'd spend every waking moment with each other. Like we were like a family. So you developed such an amazing bond, and you could feel that in the dressing room. Obviously going back, not everyone was there. It was kind of, there was new players, some not. Like it didn't have the same feel, the same kind of expectation from each other to perform. It just wasn't kind of, and I think that's probably maybe what a team kind of was mid-table, because it wasn't, yeah, it just didn't feel as driven as when we were there.
I suppose the squad, well, the players that were there the previous season were sort of ripped apart and gone elsewhere. But Darren Ferguson had stayed on for that season. Did you notice a change in him? Because I think even he admits himself that he was so heavily deflated from the relegation the previous season that he wasn't sort of in the right frame of mind to lead another promotion charge.
I didn't notice too much. Obviously, I went in and we had a good chat. And obviously, I came in with experience to help kind of push the team forward. So there wasn't, I didn't notice too much difference. Obviously, as I said, like whenever you kind of get relegated, there's always a hangover. There's always that disappointment. Obviously, for Posh to have got relegated from the Championship that season, it was like 54 points, wasn't it? So it was it that season, or was that the season before? But like, he just felt, yeah, he still felt the same. I just think he was working with a different type of player. And it's kind of just, you just have to get, you kind of have to take that on the chin, that disappointment, and try and push forward.
And I mean, I don't know if there's much more to say on 14, 15, but another year passes. It's now Grant McCann at the helm, if I remember rightly. And you're coming back for stint number three. You're seeking the 100th goal, right? You didn't, I'm trying to remember, did you score in those three games? You still got the 100th to go. Kind of comment, really, what was it like? I suppose it might have been similar to when you first joined. You've got this fresh new manager who's not long after playing. And also, was there at all any camaraderie with you and him, given that you played together and helping him as he went about becoming a manager, you know, for the first time?
Yeah, so obviously, I think I was at Luton at the time. I had to come off another injury. I'd broke my ankle, and like I think 8 or 9 months previous. They'd had some young forwards in, and I think Nathan Jones was the manager, and he kind of just said, like, my time's going to be limited. Again, first phone call is to Peterborough to see if there's any opportunity, and obviously Grant was manager. So it was kind of like, I was hoping that he'd like say, yeah, like to come in and have some experience around the place. Obviously, I'd played at the level, I'd played in the Championship, I'd done international football, so I had lots of experience, and obviously we played together. So he kind of knew who I was as a character and what I'd bring to the dressing room. So I think that was kind of like, it helped both of us, me coming back and playing football, obviously trying to get to this 100th goal, but also me kind of being in and around the dressing room, helping the younger lads through, trying to help them with like my experience, and obviously helping Grant with it, whatever way he needed.
What was Grant like as a manager? Was he similar to Fergie? Different? Could you sense similarities?
I think he's a bit more fiery than Fergie. I think obviously there's styles weren't too dissimilar. I think Grant was a bit more build up play, but they were both very fiery. I think obviously Grant kind of, when I went in, was kind of learning his way, learning kind of who he was as a manager. Because I think it's a tough thing to separate yourself from the playing role, the playing banter, all of that, and then you have to become a manager, and it becomes, there's a divide. So I think he was learning all of that as he went along. So I think he'd done a really good job at Peterborough. Obviously, there was just, I don't know the ins and outs of it, but I think it was probably a wrong decision to let him go. And then obviously, over the few years now, he's really proven himself as a top manager, which he kind of, what he did on the training ground. And then obviously, as seeing him kind of firsthand as in his like first role, I knew like he would take all of that from his playing career into his management career, and he's done that, and he's been really successful with it.
One of the key players for Posh during that period was Marcus Madison. What was he like to A, play with, share a pitch with, but also B, share a dressing room with?
An amazing talent. Like some of the things he would do in training, like he was just phenomenal. Like he had so much ability, and you could see that on the pitch, like the amount of assists he got, the goals he'd score. I think as he got a little bit older, and when I wasn't kind of in the team, as in like I was away from the club, you could see he grew into a really good footballer. But just off the pitch, he just wasn't, I don't know, it's hard to explain. He just wasn't, I don't know whether he was dedicated enough or focused enough, or there was a lot that, I think if he had the right mindset, he would have played in the Premier League, because I think he had that ability. But there was just obviously something that we've had that held him back from reaching that, which is a shame, because obviously, as I said, like he had so much ability that he could have graced the Premier League.
Yeah, and we had it. I think he was here for 8 years in the end, and we all saw that. You know, the things that he was able to do were just unbelievable on his day. But you always tell there was something just not quite right off the pitch. And I probably won't say any more, because I'm sure anyone can go read newspapers if they want to see how he's doing now. Any other, you know, good players that you were playing with that time? I think Samuelson, that young West Ham loanee, was in the door at the same time as you at one point, and he had a couple of really good games. Have I got that right?
Yeah, Samuelson's there. Was Paul Taylor there at the time?
No, came back. Yeah, yeah.
Because Paul Taylor,
did he ever leave? Paul Taylor. He did leave.
I can't remember. He left and went to Ipswich, and then some. Obviously, in a roundabout way, I think we ended up back together at Peterborough. But you're talking about like Boydie and Tomo and stuff like that. He's probably one of the most talented players I've seen. Like, and he had something that that Boydie and Tomo didn't have, which was pace. It's like he, I think again, like obviously there's probably stuff going on in the background, but like I believe he could have gone right to the top. Like some of the goals he'd scored in the Championship, some of the goals say he scored, like he had some serious ability, and he's one that I feel like could have done more within the game. But as you said, Samuelson was good. He was young. He was up and coming. He had great feet about him. Again, maybe he was just learning what the league was about. Maybe the physicality was like he could have worked on his physicality a bit more. But there was a few good. I think Leo da Silva was there. I think he was very good. Obviously, he's gone on to have a fantastic career. So he was one that really stood out. So there was a few here and there, like sprinkled about, that were in the team. And I think we were probably that season we were kind of close to the playoffs. And I think we might have had a big fall off, and we kind of ended up missing out that season. But it was, for me, like going back, like obviously Grant as manager, going back and scoring my 100th goal. I think I got it to 104 in the end, which again, I probably could have got 5, 6, 7 more with the chances I had before the 100th goal. But I think I achieved what I set out to do.
I guess, well, I kind of got two questions. I mean, reflecting on that, you kind of said it, but the fact that you hit the 100 goals in the end, 104, just amazing. Did you ever think you would do that when you, I think the answer is probably going to be yes, but when you joined, going all the way back to 2006 or whatever it was, 2007, did you think you were ever going to hit that for one club?
To be honest, no. Like I came to Peterborough excited, like obviously becoming a professional footballer like at 23 was an amazing for me. So I was kind of just full of excitement and just kind of seeing where it goes, just trying to be the best I could possibly be, score goals. Obviously the dream was to reach the Premier League, and what I achieved kind of through my time with Peterborough, like it's something that will live long in my heart. Like I couldn't have asked to have joined a better team in that moment in time. It's kind of a blueprint that everyone I think follows now. Everyone's after the young non-league player. They're trying to create these young managers, and I think Peterborough probably the first or one of the first teams to dive into that market. And over the last kind of almost 20 years, like they've competed at the kind of in the league, in League One, in trying to and pushing into the Championship. So no, I've loved my journey. Like to finish on 104 goals was amazing. I really tried to stay at the end of that season that with Grant. I think the kind of pushed it with the chairman, but he ended up signing Ricky Miller instead of me. So that was a bit frustrating because I still felt there was a lot of life left in me. I think I maybe scored 5 or 6 goals in about 16 games or something that season. So I know there was more goals to come from me. But again, football is football, and you move on. And that was the last time I played for Posh. But I say I'm very lucky that I had the time that I did.
Craig, outside of your club career, was it 7 caps that you managed to get for Scotland? How did that come around? Because I remember at the time it seemed a bit out of the blue.
Can you not tell by my thick Scottish accent why I represented them? No, so it's weird. So when I joined, my nan's Scottish, that's how I qualified, but like I have quite aunts and uncles who are Scottish. And a good heritage there. So when I joined, I actually asked Barry to find out if I was eligible, if I could play for Scotland. And he checked with who was the manager came to watch me. George Burley came and watched and wasn't interested in me representing Scotland. And then the season I was doing really well, scoring loads of goals. I think Craig Levine was a manager, and obviously took a liking to what he saw, and he gave me a phone call. I can't remember where we played, MK Dons away or Bristol Rovers away, and I got a phone call saying like that you wanted to be called up into the Scotland squad, and the first game is going to be against Brazil at the Emirates. So it was just an absolute like blur, but I'm really proud of, like I say, my family's heritage, and I was really proud to stick the shirt on and represent the country seven times.
I'm just gonna we looked up last night, Craig, some of the players you shared a pitch with across that Brazil game and also Spain. You were on the pitch with Neymar, with I mean, that Spain team was just unbelievable. Yeah, obviously had Busquets, Xavi, David Villa. Any reflections on those just games against those giants at a national level?
So the Brazil one was amazing. Like probably the most nervous I've ever been going into a team hotel. Like obviously you see Kenny Miller and Darren Fletcher and I think McGregor and all these people, and then it's like, and obviously I've just kind of come out of Dagenham, from Dagenham a few years ago. I'm playing for Peterborough, and I'm standing in the same kind of room as them. It was just like I was pinching myself to see how far I'd come. And then obviously we trained at the Emirates the night before to go and step inside the Emirates when it's empty, and it was just an amazing experience. And then I think going on the coach to the Emirates from the hotel was, again, I was so nervous, and I kind of had my eyes closed, just trying to get in the zone, trying to put my headphones on. But then I was like, if I don't open my eyes and see what's going on, I'm going to miss something spectacular. And obviously then I opened it up and I could just see like all the Scotland flags and the Brazil flags just lying in the street. It was just phenomenal. Like it was just such an amazing memory. And then I didn't really expect to play, to be honest. Like I know it was an exhibition game, but I'd only kind of just come into the team from, I think someone pulled out. But then to go in the dressing room, see my name on the back of my Scotland shirt, going and doing a warm up, and then obviously watching the game, seeing Neymar like doing his thing, it was just immense. And then just kind of with 10 minutes to go, he kind of said like get yourself warm, you're going on. And I'm away, and I was so excited to get onto the pitch, like just everything would just take over. And it was just, yeah, running around chasing Lucio and Dani Alves, and like watching Neymar twist up everyone. It was just phenomenal. And then obviously to play a few more games, and then obviously I get to play Spain. I scored against Liechtenstein the game before in a Euro qualifier. I scored in Liechtenstein, which meant we, and then again like warming up, and there's Puyol and there's Ramos and there's say Iniesta and Busquets and like Fernando Torres, and it's like these guys have just been playing like Real Madrid Barcelona games, and I'm like standing on the same pitch. So it was just, yeah, immense. And then like I think there was the first couple of minutes we didn't touch the ball and we were 1-0 down. And I was like, wow, this is going to be a long, hot evening. And then the ball went over down the channel, and I think I raced Puyol, and I might have gone shoulder to shoulder with him and knocked him over. And in that kind of, in that moment, I was like, no, I know I can do this. So then I ended up playing 90 minutes. I won a penalty. I had like a couple of chances on goal, which Valdez saved. And then I ended up getting, I think it was PK shirt at the end of the game. So it was just, yeah, phenomenal to be on the pitch with those guys and just see like how they perform week in, week out. Was just something that, again, like I've got all my caps, all my shirts, everything, which I can, my kids all love to look at and realize that dad actually did play football pretty well.
That is an absolutely unbelievable list of names, by the way, you've just reeled up. That is unbelievable. I just want to, as we get towards the end now, I just want to basically bring us up to modern day. I know you did some work with Ricky J. Jones last summer, didn't you? As far as I'm aware, you like did a bit of coaching work with him. He's obviously left Posh now as we speak. Where do you see his ceiling, and what do you sort of see the areas that he needs to work in the future now?
I think that he's got one thing that everyone wants, and it's pace. I think I saw a stat the other day, and he said he's the quickest player in the world. So he's got something that everyone wants. And I think for him, it's becoming more consistent. in front of goal. And I think for him, and when I speak to a lot of young lads, when I work with them, it's like it's working out now what their strengths and they are, how they look at the game. And I think that's what he has to do wherever he goes, whatever team he goes in, whatever league he goes in. He now needs to see like what his strengths are and how he can utilise them and how he can then cause defences problems. As I said, for him, he's got a blistering pace. So it would be a case of trying to create space so he can exploit that, which kind of we spoke about together. And I think obviously his finishing needs to improve just like any striker does. There isn't a point, I don't think, when you're a striker, when you stop improving, you're always trying to fine tune it. So something that I feel like the last few seasons he's really honed in on, because his goal returns is improved a lot. But I think he go to the top. As I said, I think as long as he's willing to keep learning and keep evaluating his own performances and keep evolving, then I think he can definitely play at the top level.
And just on general Posh thoughts next season, now Ricky's gone, where do you think we need to strengthen? You come back a few times. Where have you spotted any areas that you think it's gone wrong for Posh? Because this season, well, last season now wasn't the best.
It's tough. It's really tough because I said that earlier, like Posh have had 18 plus years of competing, or more often than not, they're competing. And sometimes at some stage, you're going to not have the players to do that. And they say last season, you lost Efron, you lost Harrison, you lost Ronnie, you lost three unbelievably good players there. And then this season, you've lost, like Ricky's gone, Hector's gone, so there's like you're losing quality players, but you've brought good young players in. It just takes time. Like when Ronnie came in, when Efron came in, when Ricky came in, they all needed time to bed in. They all needed like a season or so to bed in to then actually become the player that they've become. So I think maybe a little bit more experience would help Posh, I think, at this moment in time, because again, I think this is a transition like period. I think there's a lot of young players, and I think there's some old heads in there who can just guide the younger players through, I think is important. And I think that's it really. Like I say, that some of the performances have been good. Defensively, I think maybe it could be a little bit tighter. But again, it's just the recruitment now, like what the club's going to do. I've seen they've signed the young lad, is it Kyrell from Braintree, who's exciting. I do work with Woking, so I've seen him like when we played him, and he looked very good, very sharp. So again, I think it'd be a better season in the sense of the younger lads now have had a season to understand what it's like, what the expectations are. I just hope that Peterborough can maybe bring a bit of experience in. Might have to push the boat out. You might have to pay him a little bit more money, but I think in the long run, I think that'll really help the club.
Absolutely. So you are still involved in coaching, but then also away from the pitch. As we wrap up the pod, you have your own Assist Podcast UK. Just talk to us about that. It's primarily, by the looks of it, for raising awareness of sports professionals being open about their mental health while during their careers, rather than waiting until afterwards to talk about everything they've bottled up.
Yeah, so I'm kind of, don't hide it, I suffered a lot throughout my career with mental health, and it was never really finding the kind of the right avenues, and I feel like it's very hush hush men's mental health. It's always kind of we always have this bravado, just bottle it down and take it in and just get on with life and stuff like that. And I think that's only a way, that's more of a dangerous way to look at it, because for me, ultimately, like the more I bottled it down, the worse it got. And like as I came out the back end of football, it kind of all came out, and I really struggled. So on my kind of journey, I met my good friend Jim Burnside, who kind of has seen it from the lower leagues but has had his own kind of issues and stuff. So we talk about like the stuff that we've been through and how it affected us. We've had guests on to speak about kind of their experiences. And what's kind of touched them and what's been really difficult for them. And it's kind of just giving guys a platform, and it is men and men's mental health. And at the moment, it's majority football, but we will kind of be looking into in the future, like more sports stars, businesses, all different types of stuff, because it's not just men in football who suffer. Every men in, doesn't matter what kind of area of work you are, at least everyone suffers at some time. So it's just to say, showing that it's all right that top players and people in the sports industry suffer just as much as everyone else. And we've been brave enough to express that, to not be scared of the stigma that it comes with, and being vulnerable and kind of allowing hopefully other voices and other people to feel that they can be vulnerable as well. And then it's not scary to tell anyone that you are suffering. And again, hopefully down the line, we'll have more kind of people who will help in different avenues, kind of like breath work, like psychologists, sports psychologists, different ways and means, because it's all well and good us kind of saying, yeah, we've got these issues, but it's also like, how do we then help people with these issues? So eventually it will just keep evolving down the line, and hopefully we can kind of keep helping people and say be more vulnerable.
Absolutely. And just one more time, it is the Assist Podcast UK. And seeing as this is a Peterborough United pod, I can tell you that Craig's already had Aaron McLean and Barry Fry on. It's a good listen. Really thought-provoking listen, some of those episodes. Yeah, it's great work.
Thank you.
Craig, where's your future going? What's your aspirations? Are you going to continue your coaching and maybe one day end up in a managerial role, or are you trying to sort of pack in that side of things?
Yeah, no management role for me. That's not that side of it. I've played it and I've seen that side of it, and it's not something like I tip my hat to all the guys that go into management, because it is a real tough industry and there's a lot of moving parts. And yeah, that's not something I kind of want to go into. At the moment in time, I work with Woking as head of performance. So I do kind of all the gym work and stuff like that. I do striker training, so I work with strikers and other players. And I've just started doing kind of like biomechanics functional training. So looking at people's kind of like their postures and how they hold themselves, and then really kind of helping with that, and then building strength on top of that. And then I'm going to try and merge the two with like football as well. So I've got quite a few things going on. My aim is to kind of be training like the top people in the world, say on biomechanics, and like footballers on finishing. So I've got an aim, like, and it's just a bit piece by piece now, just building it together.
We won't rule out a fourth stint at Peterborough for Craig McHale-Smith then, because I think some of our strikers could do with some finishing work over the body of work at last season anyway. Thank you so much for your time, Craig. We really appreciate it. Obviously, we've been here like an hour and 20 minutes now. Absolutely class. Before we sign off, we always do this. Basically, we always say up the podcast. We would love a Craig McHale-Smith up the podcast before we go, if that's all right with you.
Up the podcast.
Up the podcast.
Up the podcast.
Thank you all for listening. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Up the Podcast. Let us know your feedback. Give us any ideas for topics you would like to discuss, or any questions you'd like us to answer. Up the podcast.
Thank you so much for that. Honestly, it's been an absolute pleasure. I love listening to all that. Hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, I loved it, mate. I love talking about it, and obviously just kind of reminiscing about all the things, and it's great to do. I always enjoy them.